We are joined today by Jordan Ellenberg, who is the John D. MacArthur Professor of Mathematics at University of Wisconsin-Madison, also a 2015 Guggenheim Fellow. He is writes a column for Slate called Do the Math, and his book, How Not to Be Wrong, The Power of Mathematical Thinking, is now in paperback. So, Jordan, I have to tell you, any math book I ever had, the only ones I trust are the hardbound ones that kind of have sort of a sour smell to it and have an old mathematician on the cover of it. So tell me a little bit about why I need to believe in your book.
Yeah, mine is a little bit different from those. It might not smell as interesting, but I hope it will be a little bit more fun than that book that you're thinking about. So a lot of times, the way we teach math in school, a student may wonder why they're doing it, right? This is something everybody who teaches math has heard, a student saying, when am I going to use this? What is this actually for? So one thing I try to do in the book is really to tell a lot of stories about the origins of these mathematical ideas. Every single one of them was developed by human beings to solve a human problem. And by going back both and telling historical stories and telling stories about stuff happening today, it's by telling stories that I think we really learn.
So what stories can you tell us today? Because even some of these stories seem to deal with sort of maybe some ancient things that how we even apply to today. What stories today can you apply the math to?
Well, one that I like is a story from World War II. That's pretty contemporary. How about that? It's one that I started the book with, where a group of generals came to this top secret math installation led by a guy called Abraham Wald. They had some math question. They said, we've noticed that the planes that are coming back from flying missions over Germany, they're covered with bullet holes, of course, but not evenly across the plane. There's more bullet holes on the fuselage and less on the engines. And they were like, well, maybe, okay, math guys, like, is there some formula you could tell us how much more armor should we be putting on the parts of the plane with all the bullet holes? And Wald told them, you've got to go totally upside down. You've got to put the armor where the bullet holes are not. Okay, now that's weird, right? Doesn't sound like math, but doesn't sound like sense. But what Wald explained to them is that it's not that the Germans can't hit your planes on the engine, it's that the planes that got hit on the engines were not coming back from Germany.
So that meant
that's mathematical thinking.
That meant that obviously you're looking at a skewed sample of some sort then.
Exactly, and one of the things that I try to say is that again and again, math is, well, one of the things math is about is, of course, getting numerical answers to questions, but more deeply, math is about asking the right questions in the first place.
And it's being able to apply it in something that gets results, something that's just not on a paper that ends with a number or an equation of sorts.
Exactly, and again, you see that the problems that people actually face, like, they're not only mathematical, but they're at least in part mathematical.
I'm finding mathematics showing up a lot in sports. They talk about the analytics, and there's this thing in baseball now where they know what a pitcher or a hitter is going to do, so they adjust their entire team to go where the ball is going to be. It kind of seems
right, the shift.
It's very, very similar to that. But
absolutely, and I think, there was a time, I think, when that way of thinking first started to become popular in baseball circles, there was a lot of people who were like, oh, you're going to destroy the spirit of baseball. It's just going to become like one spreadsheet against another. But I think what we've seen is that that's not true at all. I think studying statistics and studying analytics and studying the math of baseball, it enriches our experience of that sport. It doesn't shrink it. And you get kind of cool new strategies and things that didn't even exist when I was a kid, like the shift, like this thing that you're talking about, which sort of arises because thinking about things mathematically helps you expand the universe of strategies that you might consider trying.
Does it make it? We always try to put order into things, and sometimes you sort of think that math kind of puts order to the chaos. Is that really true, or is that just a perception we have of it?
I think that's true, although I might say it reveals the order that's already there. Right? We don't impose it. It's we go and find the structure that's there.
And you have a part in the book, related to the fact that my daughter is taking math too, and she's always saying, when am I ever going to use that? This kind of book kind of displays how it's being used, even if we don't know that we're using it.
Exactly, that we are mathematical beings. We're built to think about things mathematically. It's a part of our common sense, whether we refer to it as math or not. I don't think the kind of thing I'm writing, I don't think it's a replacement for the math your daughter is taking in school, but I would like to see it as a supplement. I would like to see kids kind of learning about math this way at the same time as they're like learning about, how to do the problem one by one at school.
One of the things they have on your release here, it says, you can help me, tell me how early I need to get to the airport. What kind of an equation or what thinking do I have to use other than set my alarm clock earlier than I expected?
Well, here's the deal. I mean, I write about this in the book, that there's an economist, George Stigler, who has this famous slogan, if you never miss a plane, you're spending too much time in the airport. Now, that for somebody like me, because I hate missing the plane, like emotionally, it just like gets to me. It sounds rather counterintuitive, but the point he's making is that a lot of people will say, oh, I want to make sure I don't miss the plane. But you don't actually mean that, right? Nobody is actually trying to reduce their chance of missing the plane to zero. If you did, you would get there like 6 hours before. Nobody actually does this, except I guess people who like love the duty-free or something. So the point is that it's, you can sort of set this up, but you can draw a little curve on a paper. I draw a little picture of this in the book. There's some optimal point between having zero chance of missing the plane and having 100% of chance of missing the plane, which is how much risk you're willing to accept. And everybody's willing to accept some risk.
And that kind of gives us an idea of how, of course, then it's up to the plane to be there when we expected it to be there, I suppose. That's a whole other different probability.
I will say I did show up 28 minutes before departure the other day, and I got on. I think the airport people actually, when they need to be fast, they can be super fast.
Wow. So what does Facebook know about us?
It's funny, both a lot and a little. I mean, we are in the age of big data, right? These companies rely on the power of numbers, their numbers of users, and then also the numbers, the numerical information they have about you. I think a lot of people feel like the future is Facebook being super spooky and like knowing you better than you know yourself. That, I think, is not true. You know, math is not magic, and one reason I want people to learn math is kind of to demystify it a bit. But what Facebook is doing is trying to make predictions about your behavior that are maybe like 2% better than the competition. That doesn't sound mystical, but if they can win by that 2%, that translates into a huge amount of dollars for them.
How not to be wrong. Though in your book you say it's sometimes okay to be wrong, or it's good to be wrong, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think the title suggests that if you read the book, you will never be wrong about anything. And then I admit about halfway through, you know, it's like too late to like take it back to the store. Like that's a little bit of a tall order, right? To never be wrong. I mean, one thing is that really knowing math, part of the math is understanding the limits of math, understanding that there's some questions you can answer by logical or formal means, but also understanding which things are outside those bounds.
The key to that is asking the right question, I guess, too.
And absolutely.
The book is called How Not to Be Wrong, The Power of Mathematical Thinking. Our guest today, Jordan Ellenberg. Thanks for sharing the details. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much.